Welcome to the Journal Hijabi podcast. I'm your host, Sirin, and here we're all about elevating the voices of hijabi women in mainstream media through authentic storytelling. Without further ado, let's begin the episode.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, Yasmeen.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
Welcome back to Journal Hijabi.
It's good to be here yet again.
So we're So I'm currently sitting in my sister's apartment in Austin. I came back with her. She lives here. I live back in our hometown. So I brought this journal with me where I kind of brain dump my thoughts for the podcast as they come.
What's a brain dump?
When you dump your brain in a trash can.
No, tell people because it's a really cool way to...
Well, I kind of got the... Well, actually, you were telling me like the term brain dump, but really what I meant to say was like a train of thought. So whenever I have like a train of thought pop up about the hijab or like relating it to Journal Hijabi or like Muslim woman, I have this journal where I open it and I write like the episode like laid out. So now I've laid out kind of like how the hijab seems to always tie back to politics and controversy, which just really kind of bugs me. And I was scrolling on Instagram and I came across my favorite, you know, Instagrammer, creator, influencer, Nawal Sari. I really hope I'm saying that right. Let's just say Noel. She's like this hijabi in Australia, and she posted about her marriage, like being married as a Muslim woman, and how, you know, she just said that that's like the biggest accomplishment of the year for her. And so immediately she's received like backlash in the comments of like, well, how you're tying your biggest accomplishment to a marriage or to a man and this. And so she just like talks about it in her story, and you know, this is today, writes like how Muslim women need to start supporting other Muslim women and just be happy for them, and how like marriage is romanticized, and just to see it as, you know, not trendy. She discusses that. So let's see what exactly what she said. So this episode is like based off of kind of like that idea, to where the hijab just keeps tying back to politics, controversy, when really like I just wanted it to be like, you know, like a fun, a conversation, something with Journal Hijabi, but it's just the reality of it. I'm facing it. And so this is kind of what this episode is. So as you might have heard before, I am incorporating like the 4 daily check-ins on my podcast. So whatever person I have, or if it's just like me recording it solo, we do this 4 kind of check-in, 4-way check-in. So I'm gonna start physically. Right now I feel kind of honestly tense and anxious, because when you talk about like the hijab, it's such a personal topic to me, and you won't really understand it unless you're hijabi. Sometimes you literally feel like you're fighting for your life, like you're fighting a war because what you choose to wear is political and it's discussed in courthouses and there's bans on it and laws, like a literal attack on what you choose to wear.
Mm-hmm.
And that's draining and it could be scary. So that's how I feel. What am I doing about it? I'm recording this podcast unapologetically as a journal hijabi and speaking up about it and just knowing that it's not with me and my hijab, it's like with them. Mentally, I feel like I'm in La La Land. That's all. Spiritually, I always say it's an ongoing practice. Like, you can never really be like perfect spiritually or lacking. It's always like trying. So now, because I'm kind of traveling, like, you know, outside of like where I live, I've just like been combining prayers, and I really, like, I bring my masbaha and I try to do a lot of like dhikr, you know, just keeping God on your tongue and like remembering him and reading Quran at night, even if it's just like one page, one surah. Like, I read Surah Al-Mulk, which, yeah, you know, they say like it's supposed to protect you of the punishment in the grave. So yeah, a nice thought to go to sleep with.
Beautiful.
You don't want to be punished in the grave, read Surah Al-Mulk, apparently.
Yeah.
And then lastly, the fourth one, emotionally. Emotionally, I don't know, it's kind of tricky because do you think that like mentally and emotionally is like kind of the same?
It's funny that you say that because I was thinking
mental
physically
brain.
And emotionally kind of feel the same. Because
well,
if you would say physically,
no, because physically is like a little feeling in your body. Emotionally is like in your mind, and then mentally is like in your brain. So emotionally,
you think emotionally is in your mind? I feel like emotion is a body
because
feeling.
You, well, it could be both, but because like I wake up and in my mind, I'm telling my mind that I'm going to be happy. I'm training my mind to be positive. I'm training my mind right now wants to be sad, you know, stuff like that. So emotionally, I would say I'm good. I'm like, okay, I'm excited. You.
Whoa. Physically, I think I'm feeling a little bit tense and anxious, but it feels good that we are doing something about it, and recording this podcast and talking about it is what makes it makes the difference and makes us express our feelings so that we can then actually do something about it. Mentally, I'm honestly feeling discombobled right now.
Discombobulated.
Discombobulated.
Disfigurated.
Because of the conversation that we just had about emotionally, you said emotionally for you is something mental, and I said emotionally for me it's something bodily, and that's just something that I'm pondering on because you're so right. It is something that you can say in your brain, I am happy, I am sad, and That just goes to show how powerful our brain is and how we can really command our brain to feel a certain way. And you're not just tied to how your body feels. So definitely pondering that idea and want to sit with it. I think that that's going to be really beneficial for me. So thank you for bringing that up. So that's mentally, you did physically, emotionally. I'm feeling really full. I'm feeling really great. I'm really happy that you're here and that we get to have this sister bonding time and have good conversations and make good memories together. And yeah, what I'm doing about that is
just doing it,
harnessing that feeling. Yeah, exactly.
I like it.
And then spiritually, I'm feeling good. I think, you know, definitely didn't do my stretchies today, which is an important part of me feeling good spiritually, because I feel like stretching for me is a really good way to release
and nurture your deep divine femme.
Yeah, and just like release any stagnant energy in the body. So yeah, definitely need to do a little bit of that. Yeah. But yeah, that's my four check-ins, and I'm really glad that we started doing that, because it's a really beautiful way to check in with yourself. It's always important to do that. It's a beautiful reminder.
Yeah, and I feel like it's definitely important to bring up like being a Muslim woman, because I was just telling you before that it's not something that I see like in the online community, in social media, of like Muslim women like being healthy or active or wellness, you know. Unfortunately, like I've just seen it either be like gossip or drama or like not being, you know, or jealousy or stuff like that. So I'm really trying to bring like that wellness aspect. And you know, I'm not gonna say Muslim, because I keep saying I never like blame the religion or point at the religion, because Islam is perfect. It's the culture, I guess, like the culture and society, mm-hmm. because human beings make up cultures and society, and human beings aren't perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
So don't distort the religion, you know?
Sometimes I think like such an amazing religion has been sent down, something so perfect, so holy, so golden, sent down to us. Like it could have been sent to any people in the world, and it was sent down to us, and even we don't even know, even we don't even know what to do with it. Like,
wow, like it's just like we'll just cry.
Yeah,
I was just telling you that about, you know, like Ramadan is coming up, and just like that month feels just so out of the world, so magical.
Precious.
I thought you said depression, like what like out of the world fairy tale, magical, but also a beautiful struggle,
mm-hmm. of a beautiful struggle of, that's perfect,
of fasting in your body and your heart. And there was like a saying that I always go back to in Ramadan, which is empty your stomach and feed your soul,
mm-hmm.
like that's what Ramadan is. And like thinking that we have like Mecca and Hajj and the Kaaba, like when I look at videos and pictures of that, and like that's for us like Muslims, I'm like, whoa, that's like the most beautiful thing that I've like ever seen.
Yeah. So
I asked you, like I was thinking of thoughts and like ideas about the hijab, and I were kind of asking this question earlier of, at what point in history did we decide for the hijab to be political, diplomatic?
I don't think we decided. I think someone decided for us.
Yeah, not we, but you know, like like in society, people, was like the Prophet's days when it was first mentioned in the Quran, like historical. Because you feel like ever since the beginning of the hijab and the headscarf, like it's been political and controversial. So I did some research and I dated back to, okay, like who wore the first hijab, or like when was it like first mentioned, when was like the concept of the veil. We know it's in the Quran, so essentially they date it back to 627 CE, which is common era. That's been a very long time. That's you know, it's been through a lot of history, the hijab. And essentially when you really research it, and I want to make a whole episode about this, the hijab was essentially a sign of social status that you would veil yourself because you wouldn't be like out there working in the fields or something, or something like that. You know, it was like a social status. Like nowadays they'll wear like the gloves or some, you know, the scarves, you know, it's a sign of social status,
mm-hmm.
and it's so
high social status.
It's so sad that now it's coined the opposite,
mm-hmm.
like in a such an image of dangerous or mm-hmm. oppressed or this, like how dare you discoin my term, determ my hijab like that. It's a symbol of social status is what it is.
Yeah, and it's so much more than that. But I think that, you know, these people know its power, the hijab, and what it means to us. And when people see something powerful and something so beautiful, when they don't know it, they become then afraid of it, and they become, because they become afraid of it, they just want to tear it down, they want to break it down, they want to paint it in this negative light. And unfortunately, that's what they've done about the hijab, that's what also what they've done about Islam. And that brings me to say I'm just really thankful for Jurnal Hijabi, because even though hijab has been seen to be something political and controversial, Jurnal Hijabi creates the space for it to be fun and playful, and for us to hear stories from hijabis, not from the news, not from this random article that a white man wrote.
Mm-hmm. But also, I was telling you, like, now that I'm realizing, like, I've been shying away and trying with every ounce of my being to make Journal Hijabi a different narrative of the hijab, a way of not only from me, but like fun and celebratory. But I've come to the conclusion, like, now it's like I'm just embodying everything that comes with the hijab, and sometimes that does mean that it's going to be controversial and political. So now I'm embodying that. I was denying it for the longest. I just wanted it to be fun, chatty, talk about it, relate about it, but that's not reality. So now I'm accepting all the spectrum of the hijab: politics, controversy, fun, talking. It could be all those things, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So when I kind of get deep into topics like this, I like to do my own research and dig deep, like, into peer-reviewed scholarly articles that are like fact-checked. So there's this article by jstor.org, and anytime I mention an article, I'm going to put it in the description notes. It's titled "Muslim Woman in the Politics of the Headscarf." I'm kind of going to read over that, just like an overview, and like, let's see. And I really haven't, you know, read it before this, so like, let's see what we think about it, or kind of talk about it like in more detail. "Muslim Woman in the Politics of the Headscarf" by Anna. For many women, wearing the hijab was and is an element of pity. It's piety, right? Piety? Pity.
Is it P-I-O-T-Y?
Wow, it's the reality of it. Yeah, piety. P-I-E-T.
Well, that says something.
Okay. "As the hijab, the headscarf worn by many Muslim women, has become increasingly visible in global metropolises, it has also become increasingly politicized. Many people are surprised to learn that the hijab, in the sense of a head covering, appears nowhere in the Quran. Primarily associated with Islam, the headscarf has been popular in different parts of the world for a spectrum of culture, religious, and pragmatic reasons. The practice of head covering has been common in Jewish, Christian, Hindu, and Hindu communities. But it never attracted as much attention and engendered so much controversy in relation to those faiths as it done in the Muslim context since the 19th century." So it's interesting, like, now just reading it, seeing how it's like relating the hijab to like different cultures across the whole world. And so it's saying, like, the Reza Shah in Iran of 1936, about like the prohibitions and, you know, the hijab and things like that. And then, like, also in Turkey, and Afghanistan's king strongly discouraged its use in the 1920s and 30s. And so here we have, you know, Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Egypt. During the British colonial period, the hijab was controversial. So you see how it really dates back to everywhere around the world, political, historically. So let's see why.
Well, it was interesting how it said it was in Egypt during British control.
Let's go back to the British. The British.
Reza Shah in Iran had a very British-controlled agenda. He wanted to westernize the country very much.
It's like in modern day, that's the hijab ban in France.
So it's interesting to see how, like, I mean, I don't know what happened in Turkey and in Afghanistan, but in those two examples, in Iran and Egypt, the controversy came from the West. It wasn't our own people, you know what I mean? It was like an outside influence saying that what you're doing is wrong.
You know, when I just read this part, this just answered our question in this whole podcast of why is the hijab political? And how could I forget this? The attacks of September 11th introduced a new era. Muslims were collectively punished for terror committed by 19 men. So anti-Muslim hate crimes rose a lot in the 2000s. So women who wore the hijab were conspicuous targets. That's when it started becoming political.
Fuck.
Wow. Didn't we know that? We didn't like we knew that, but we didn't like know that. Mm-hmm. That's when it started tying
here
into
in the U.S.
here in the U.S. and political and government and propaganda for the war on terrorism and banning Islam, and it's always a Western thing.
Yeah, it really is. And do you know how many hijabis had to take off their hijab or decided to take off their hijab after 9/11 because they feared their life? Like, that is so sad. Isn't America built on the idea to freely practice your religion, whatever it may be, instead of being punished for it and blamed?
Exactly. And I was thinking this the other day of how long they used, like, the media, American media, I don't know who it is, the hijab as a scapegoat. Mm-hmm. We were scapegoats in an image of war for so long and sort of still are, but I think it's getting better. Which, why I go back to telling you, like, it feels like survival, you know, the mm-hmm. hijab. But I'm sitting now, like, in more content from when we first started.
Yeah.
Because it was floating in the air. I was, like, tense and anxious, just like I told you, feeling that, well, why is my hijab, like, why are you talking about my hijab? Why is it in laws? Why is it banned? Why are you telling me, you know, discriminating at workplaces, like literal rules? When did it become political? Oh, 9/11 used as a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like now we're like freeing ourselves. Muslim women are like freeing them. I want to say Muslim women, hijabi women are freeing themselves from that scapegoat victim shackle mm-hmm. that we've been put upon in the eye of the media.
Yeah. It's just, it's sad how people think that they have to paint something in a negative light just because they know nothing about it.
But I honestly think it's deeper than that. You think it's that, but these are like specifically planned political agendas mm-hmm. from, you know, president to president. And every time that they have a plan, there has to be a scapegoat. And for that era, hijabis were the scapegoats.
Yeah, and you know what? And maybe it's quite the opposite. Maybe they do know a lot about it. They do know
and
exactly
yes,
the power
that they're
that it
intolerant
gives,
to it. The deep-rooted issue that they're intolerant to it. So it was just like a two-in-one for them, basically.
But, like, imagine knowing the power that you give back to a woman when she gets to choose what to wear and cover herself in that way. Imagine how powerful a woman is when she gets to have that opportunity. They don't want women to be powerful. They don't want
and
us to be
powerful.
And not
only that, what is the hijab tied with? Islam, the most powerful religion in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they won't allow that.
No.
So all this comes to my advice in the end of this episode is that don't be afraid that the hijab can sometimes be tied to politics and controversy. And don't only think that the hijab is tied with politics and controversy. That it's just much more than that on a large spectrum. That it can be the embodiment of power and being a woman and practicing your religion and being fun.
Exactly. We were curious about why hijab is political. We did some research on it together. We read about it. And now we know the origins of the politics of hijab, and we've come to understand that. And now that we've come to this understanding and we know the root of it, which is not our people and it is the West, and it's very much fear-based, that we can take a step back and remember that exactly that this is just fear-based, and people have that fear because they don't know about it. And it's our duty to educate people about the hijab, I think. And, you know, like when I was a hijabi, I used to get questions all the time. Like, what is that? Why do you wear it? Like, tell me about it. And it was honestly my favorite question. And even these people would be hesitant to ask that because they didn't know, like, oh, how am I going to feel about it? I loved getting that question because I loved telling people what the hijab was. And that is the work. That is the work, to tell people, to educate people, because people are politicizing it because they don't know. And they don't know better. And sure, maybe these people in the top know, but your average Joe doesn't know. They don't know what the hijab is, even till this, especially here in Texas. We're in South Texas. The average person, if you ask them what a hijab is, they do not know. Have you seen those videos of those guys going around New York and saying, what have you heard about Muslims? This is like 2022 and people do not know. And so, of course, when it comes online and it's the news and somebody's telling you about something you don't know, you're going to believe it because you don't know anything else. So my advice is to continue to celebrate the hijab, to continue to tell people what the hijab is, and spread the love that way.
Totally. And I'm proud to say that, kind of, you were saying some people don't really know, still don't know what the hijab is. I think that our generation, they know it. Everyone knows it. It's probably the people, you know, like the boomers and, yeah, and more than that, that are just like intolerant to it, the radio generation.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is what brings me back to being grounded about the topic of the hijab, that I'm growing around people that know what it is. They're educated, they're cultured, and they celebrate the hijab with me. Like, mm-hmm, just knowing that people my age feel that way about the hijab, that's the world that we're gonna grow in. So don't think of it the other way, because the other way is scary.
Yeah. And it's also false. It's a bunch of people who don't understand the hijab and are wanting to paint a certain picture of it.
And just in a bigger picture, are intolerant of other people's differences.
Yes. And that's the problem, really. Welcome to East Austin.
Okay, so ending with the four check-ins, just to see how they've changed. Physically, I feel relaxed now. Mentally, I feel clear and content. Spiritually, I feel good because now I want to go pray. Because I have to pray, Aisha. Emotionally, I feel grounded.
That's good. Yeah, emotionally, I also feel grounded in that knowledge. Spiritually, I feel good. I feel content. I feel relaxed. Physically, I feel very calm. And mentally, I'm feeling clear.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Thanks for reaching the end of the episode. We hope you learned something new about the women who wear the hijab. You can watch the recorded video of this episode on YouTube at Journal Hijabi. And be sure to follow our Instagram at Journal Hijabi to stay updated on all things hijabi and help spread our stories. Until next time, never forget the power of being a hijabi.